It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. In 5 days, you can turn the page on policies that put greed and irresponsibility on Wall Street before the hard work and sacrifice of folks on Main Street. In 5 days, you can choose policies that invest in our middle class and create new jobs and grow this economy so that everyone has a chance to succeed. Folks who can't pay their medical bills or send their kids to college, or you not being able to afford college, or thinking about that $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 worth of debt that you might have to carry. People who can't save for retirement. You know, ordinary Americans, we can't take a back seat to CEOs and Wall Street banks for 4 more years. But remember, we faced difficult times before. The American story has never been about things coming easy. It's been about rising to the moment when times are tough. Some of you may be cynical and fed up with politics, and you have every right to be. But despite all of this, I ask of you what's been asked of Americans throughout our history. If you'll stand with me and fight by my side and cast your ballot for me, I promise you this, we will not just win Missouri, we will win this general election, and together we will change this country and we will change the world. Thank you.
All right, that was almost 10 years ago. That was Barack Obama in October of 2008, right before the election. Promising to fundamentally transform the United States of America. Remember, he ended by saying, together we will change the country and change the world. I couldn't help but think as I was listening to his words there that he talked about the greed of Wall Street. He talked about everybody needs an equal chance. He talked about making health care available to everyone. He talked about college debt being reduced. He talked about taking, we can no longer take a backseat to CEOs in Wall Street. It was great bullet points, and it was a promise that resonated with Americans across the country. He was elected, and now the rest is history. Did he succeed? Did they succeed in fundamentally transforming this country? That's what I want to talk about today, and I want to talk about with Daniel Greenfield. Daniel, in short, is an expert on the move and progress of the left. He is a Shulman Journalism Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center out in California. His beat, you can read his stuff at Front Page Mag, but also he blogs under his fun name, Sultan Kish. So that's where a lot of people know him. He talks about really everything that I think the general thing is has to do with just the subversion, whatever name it takes. He's listed as a hate group of one by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which, you know, he's a kindred spirit to me since I'm on their hate list also. But he says, in his own words, his scope of writing covers everything from domestic American politics to creeping Islamism in Scotland and how foreign aid makes its way into the hands of terrorists to white aborigines in Australia, Islamist imams in Libya, flogging in the Maldives, and the hunt for witches in the Muslim world. Daniel, I think there might be a few things we could talk about here. How are you?
Good, good. Not one or two things.
Yeah, one or two things. You know, your stuff is really interesting. And, of course, you've been quoted by some of the best. So I had the benefit of hearing Daniel give a briefing in Washington just last week. And that's why I asked him to join us today. This is a subject that fascinates me because I've followed the left myself. As you, my listeners know, I've visited every communist country besides Cuba, in the hemisphere. I've been North Korea. I've been to China several times. I've been to Russia before the wall fell. I mean, before the breakup of the Soviet Union, I lived in Berlin before the wall came down. So this is an area of interest to me. But Daniel, also has some roots with this, which I'll get to shortly. But I want to start with this. Daniel, you heard and you were reminded again of what Obama promised in 2008. So my question to you is, do you think Obama and his cohorts managed to do what he promised?
So the left, people like Barack Obama, tend to see America in terms of the government, in terms of the institutions. So their goal was transform the institutions and then you transform Americans. And conservatives see America in terms of people. And they don't believe that if you just transform the institutions, you're going to transform people. You can definitely have an impact on people. As you quite well know, the communist tyrannies had a great deal of impact on people. But the reality is people are more than the sum of the institutions. So there's no question that they did a tremendous amount of institutional transformation. And we can see that in the multi-front war against President Trump, against conservatives, that is being now fought within the government, outside the government. We have the spectacle of the FBI having been enlisted in an attempt to really remove a sitting president of the United States. That's horrifying. It's outrageous. It's a fundamental break with everything that America used to be. It's certainly a fundamental transformation. It's a fundamental transformation when major banks are now implementing gun control on behalf of the left. Those are fundamental transformations. But at the same time, we see clear signs of hope within the American people. We see the rallies that actually power Trump to victory when it was supposed to be completely impossible. The latest poll out now actually shows that millennials, certainly white millennials, now back the Republicans, and we're seeing shifts among the population that the left has targeted the hardest, where it's tried to brainwash them the hardest within colleges, within schools. So the left has certainly fundamentally transformed institutions, but it doesn't control the American people.
Hey, Daniel, I have to interrupt you because I want to ask you about that poll because I haven't heard about that. White millennials are leaning Republican? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, so right now it's actually split evenly among young white men. Republicans now have a 9% advantage. And even you see among some African-American millennials, you actually see shifts toward Republicans because tax cuts have delivered. People are seeing more money in their paychecks, and it's having an impact.
Where do you think Barack Obama, again, that was chilling to me, Daniel, when he said it. Those of us that follow the left and cultural Marxism, and also because I'm from Chicago, and I was working for the Alan Keyes campaign, trying desperately to get Barack Obama not elected because we knew his past. We knew who he was. So when he said he wanted to fundamentally transform this country, we knew exactly what he was talking about. But people did not want to listen. But my question is, where do you think they made the greatest, what were their greatest achievements during this last nearly 10 years?
Well, the major shift was the fundamental institutional transformation. It's their ability to network together all these varied institutions, because we think of as government as being separate from the private sector. And one of their efforts, recovery efforts after from Wall Street, was actually to network together big banks to the auto bailout, to wire together major companies together with government organizations into a single social and political agenda. That's been a major game changer. They've been able to use the Dear Colleague letters to fundamentally transform what goes on campuses. And their idea is to bring all these elements together, the nonprofit, the corporate sector, the government sector together, all to serve one larger government agenda. It's a very scary development, and we're actually seeing that being implemented as a form of political warfare. It's a kind of embryonic communism, and the damage obviously has been devastating. But again, I do believe that we are seeing signs of national recovery from that.
Yes, and we're going to come back to that because I don't think I give my listeners enough hope because in the news happens, it usually is so bleak. I have been more encouraged lately. I sort of feel the way you do. It's like people are just like beginning to rise up and say, no way. This is too far. You've gone too far. But let's talk about still what we're up against, because you and I both know that the left never quits. They never quit. They never, never, never quit. They're like cockroaches. They go back into the corner when the light comes on, and as soon as the light goes out, they're back and everywhere. And that's what I've seen happen time and time again. But I want to ask you, a fundamental question, speaking of the word fundamental, what were the origins? Where does this come from? Obama's passion. I'm picking on him. He's the like the personification of what's been happening in many areas, but the origins of Obama's passion to fundamentally change us into something that many of us don't recognize. What is the origin of that movement?
Well, to be a bit philosophical for a moment, it's power. It's the idea that some people should have power over everybody else. Now, the left justifies that by inventing particular problems. It says there's a major crisis we have to head off. Originally, it was class warfare. These days, it's environmental catastrophe. But the idea is there's a national emergency, there's a global emergency, and the only way to address this emergency is to give the left complete and total power. That is what it's always been animated by. And why do people want absolute and total power? We can talk about greed, we can talk about arrogance, we can talk about pride, we can talk about all the old sins, because that's what it ultimately comes down to. It's the idea that some people are more fit to rule others, and that is the central idea behind the left.
But the name that we might give it, okay, so if I were to say that this reminds me an awful lot of Marxism, would you be shocked?
It is Marxism. It's all the same thing, ultimately. They call it progressivism. They call it liberalism. There's absolutely nothing liberal about it. It's a radical ideology which says that every current system must be overturned and transformed and remade in the image of the left. We've seen this with the French Revolution. We've seen this in countless bloody revolutions in Africa and Asia and Europe. We've seen the end result. We're seeing it right now in Venezuela, where starving people are running away because the government insisted that they could run everything better than the people.
So, Daniel, if I had been living in Russia at the turn of the century when Nicholas was czar and Alexandra was the tsarina, would I have seen some of the same themes?
Well, it's important to remember that the communists ended up overthrowing an actual Republican government rather than the czar. They tried to kind of compress the two. But their idea was that you couldn't actually have a democratic system. You couldn't have people voting for their representatives. Everything has to be controlled by the people who know everything on the left. It's the party members who are supposed to be in control. The left likes to talk about democracy. It calls all its dictatorships democratic. There's nothing democratic about them. There's nothing democratic about what Obama was doing. Obama was talking about we are the ones we have been waiting for. He didn't mean that the people were actually the ones who would be in charge. He spoke in terms of empowering the people, but the administration actually centralized and controlled more. It was hostile to transparency. There's a lot of talk now about how the Trump administration threatens the First Amendment. In the Obama era, there were actual targeting of reporters, eavesdropping on them, raiding them, arresting them, even locking them up in closets in one case. Because ultimately, this is about centralizing power. It's about a dictatorship.
You know, one thing that I have noticed, just personally, and this goes to the psychology of it all, which I hope to get to, you know, the American way has been to be sort of humble. Even in public service, we feign humility. People feign humility, even if they're not terribly humble. But this arrogance of the left is stunning to me. This we are seeing in their words and their countenance, the superior attitude that they really do know more. We've caught it in their off-the-cuff remarks, that they are, as you said, the group that is better equipped, smarter, better educated, and equipped to rule the rest of us. I think we're actually seeing that with our own eyes, at least without the gloves are off, if you want to say it that way. The mask is off. We are seeing the arrogance of the decision of some, the elites, as we call them in Washington, to try to take power. There is no humility, not even feigning humility. It's pretty amazing. When we return, Daniel Greenfield, let's talk about your own past and how you got drawn into this discussion, your upbringing, and why it is that you, the man that you are at this point in your life, feels so strongly about freedom and capitalism in the right way, the right kind of capitalism. We'll talk to Daniel in just a second. By the way, you can read his stuff at Sultan Kish, Sultan Kish, or Front Page Mag. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Anarchy in Berkeley. Antifa protesters swarm at an anti-hate rally, turning it into chaos. More than 100 anarchists dressed in black assaulting people at the march, including Trump supporters. The protesters also chanting against cops. At least 13 people under arrest. Two people who were attacked had to be hospitalized, but will be okay.
All right, that was a Fox News alert from some time ago. This past year, in the last 12 months, I'd say. Berkeley, the protests, as we saw Antifa attacking people. We've seen this repeatedly, but that's the one that was most notable to me. We've seen uprisings around the country, Ferguson, the riots of Black Lives Matter. We've seen what happened in Washington, D.C. after the inauguration. I think most Americans, in fact, polls showed recently that something like 70% of Americans polled are recognizing that there's something wrong. There is something wrong. Their fabric, the security that we have long enjoyed is being eroded. And so Daniel Greifel is my guest. Daniel, again, is the Shulman Journalist Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center. By the way, David Horowitz is a good friend of mine. David was a radical in the 60s who became a conservative after one of his friends, maybe one or more of his friends, were murdered by the Black Panthers. David has an incredible story. I think his book was Radical Son, his first one, something like that. David is the founder of Freedom Center, and that's where Daniel is associated now. It's Front Page Mag, where he writes, and also Sultan Kish is Daniel's personal blog. Daniel, you are an expert on the left, but you know, you can read and become an expert on something, or you can experience it like I have. I grew up learning about this, and then, of course, I've traveled a lot and seen firsthand what happens when people lose their freedoms. It's frightening when you see the potential of what this country could be if we don't pull this back. But I'm curious to know, Daniel, what your upbringing was that you should feel so strongly and passionately and write the way you do about this.
Well, my direct family, my parents had very direct experiences of living in totalitarian systems, totalitarian countries. My mother was a political dissident in the Soviet Union, which she managed to leave. My father was a young boy when the Nazis invaded and rolled into Poland, and he was forced to escape. So my family has seen both sides of the spectrum. They've seen what totalitarianism does. They've seen what happens when a society loses its freedom and oppresses people, and certainly filled me with a love of freedom and a desire to oppose and fight the left.
You know, it's interesting, you know, Marco Rubio has the story about his dad. And there are others who are serving in Congress that I think that, look, my dad fought in World War II, and that's, my parents were both aware of what was going on in the world. It was a topic at our dinner table, and that's how it started with me, I'm sure, before I ever had any travel experience. They instilled in me the importance of defending and loving freedom. This is what we have to do to our children and for our children and for this generation. Let's talk, practically speaking, Daniel, about how the left is attacking our system. And I think one of the things that all of us are really, really concerned about is our free speech or First Amendment rights. So let's talk about that for a second. What is it? Let's go to the final question. What is it that they're trying to achieve? In a perfect world, what would the left succeed at doing when it comes to free speech?
They don't believe that there is such a thing as free speech. They believe that speech, that all human efforts, that everything we do should serve their common goals. The idea of free speech, the idea of free elections, the idea of free anything as opposed to free stuff is that people can actually be able to make up their own minds. It's that people are the best judges. It's the wisdom of the crowds and the wisdom of the marketplace. And the left completely rejects this. Everything that the left stands for is a top-down system for controlling commerce, for controlling individual behavior, for controlling speech. So we're seeing the left stamping out free speech everywhere they can. They began on college campuses because that was the most vulnerable point. They're now spreading through America. You have the New York Times running editorials arguing that the First Amendment has to be rethought because it actually causes physical harm to people to hear speech that they don't like. We're seeing this in society in general. We're seeing people being forced to apologize for even talking about voting for Trump. The left is not based on any kind of notion of free speech. Free speech is fundamentally antithetical. It's a liberal value in the classical liberal sense rather than in the way that the left means, because the left is not liberal. It's fundamentally illiberal. It believes in totalitarian control over every aspect of human behavior, and that's the important thing to remember.
You know, I have to say, just to remind everyone, including maybe you've forgotten this too, I was actually looking real quickly, but I know that it's been in the last, I believe, 2 years that Democratic senators, that's in the U.S. Senate, voted to repeal the First Amendment. I think that's a vote that Ted Cruz pushed, as I recall. They actually voted to repeal the First Amendment. That's the right to free speech. That's the right to free religious expression. But the First Amendment covers all of that. It is the basic right that we have as Americans to live as individuals and have our own conscience. And yet the Democrats voted to repeal it. It is pretty stunning. But Daniel, we're actually seeing now, I think it was you I heard point out in that meeting, that when Donald Trump won in 2016, it was, a lot of it was because of social media and the fact that Americans were able to get around the mainstream media and get the word out to each other about what was happening. And you, I think, said they're never going to let that happen again. Can you explain what it is they're doing to stop that?
So they treated President Trump's victory as a crisis, and they blamed free speech. They blamed initially something they called fake news. These days we think of fake news as something that President Trump calls CNN. But right after the election, they began claiming that there were fake news stories being circulated on social media. This was an urgent crisis and that we needed to do something about it. What they proposed to do about it was having media fact checkers decide what could appear on Facebook and in other services. And indeed, Facebook actually let them do it, which led to really bizarre situations because you have mainstream media people now deciding if you can post a new story to Facebook. And if the fact checkers disagree, it gets a disputed tag, and that site might actually end up being banned from Facebook. Now, this actually happened to the Babylon Bee, which is a satirical Christian site, which ran a satirical joking story about the CNN, I believe, getting washing machines to spin stories and getting the facts out. It's an obvious joke, but their fact checkers marked it as disputed, which meant Babylon Bee might actually end up being banned from Facebook until, you know, common sense took over. But this is happening to sites like the ones that I work for all the time because the media now put itself in charge of determining what people could say on social media. This is a scary development. But, of course, it's not just stopping there. It's diving into Google. It's going after rival organizations like Sinclair. It's trying to do everything possible to consolidate total control over free speech. So back in the day, the media had top-down control over the press, over messaging. You listened to Walter Cronkite or you listened to nobody. You read the New York Times or there were no other options. The internet fundamentally changed that, and the left is now trying to crack down via Google and Facebook. Google controls something like 80% of search. Facebook controls, again, something like 80% of social. And really increasingly people, especially millennials, are getting their news through the internet, which means if you can control the internet, you can rebuild the old media monopoly.
And let me give a couple of more examples that just happened in the last couple of days here. Facebook has blocked a Daily Caller story in which they printed some more FBI texts between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. They're just reprinting their email, and Facebook blocked it. And I think they sent them a message. I forgot what silly. Oh, our security systems have detected that a lot of people are posting the same content, which could mean that it's spam. Please try a different post. It was a Daily Caller. That's Tucker Carlson's news service or media outlet. It's not a news service. I guess it is a news service. But Facebook has blocked it. Now they've reinstated it because Daily Caller has some muscle. But this is happening to people all over. And what that means to all of you listening is that the stuff that you want to post or you want to share or things that you need to see and read are being blocked. And Daniel, I would have to tell you, too, that I'm noticing that with many of my friends, my conservative leader friends, people on the inside, our stuff is being blocked. We have a We're working with we've just worked with John McLaughlin to do a poll, and it's called the Ear to the Ground Listening Project. And we were trying to exchange information about that, and I could not pass it on. And it said basically that this cannot be passed on because ear to the ground is associated with spam, and so you need to eliminate it from your content before you can forward this. This was an email. This is the kind of somehow they are detecting down in the weeds. Just the exchange of what otherwise would be a completely innocuous, it's just not good information for the left, but it's certainly not hate speech, or there's no category under which it should be banned. So I just want to illustrate how bad it's getting. Shirley, you must have had some problem with that yourself, I'm guessing.
We are. Every major conservative site is having problems, even the minor ones. Some have actually been forced to shut down. There's been an analysis of just how badly the traffic has dropped. There are things like shadow banning, in which something that you're posting appears to go through, but is actually being blocked. There are outright bans. There are demonetizations, particularly on YouTube. So this is a major comprehensive problem. This is something that the left set into motion in two ways. One, as I mentioned, was the claim of fake news. The other was a supposed Russian bot, which, again, is an excuse for shutting down and blocking certain content and running into these kinds of supposed safeguards. It's a bad situation because, again, it means that the left is very much pushing to block certain ideas, to consolidate control over speech. It means that its experts get to decide what's legitimate and what isn't, and technically there's no First Amendment violation because it's major corporations doing this.
We also should add that this is... We are way far behind Europe on this. Europe has already instituted speech codes, and I don't know how they're handling Facebook, but they have, and actually I can't even say definitively how they're handling Google at this point, but my understanding is that Google and Facebook both are trying to move to that European model. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, this is something they very much want. Europe does not have free speech. Europe has never really had free speech, and they have very, very tight restrictions. Australia, which had a certain kind of free speech, has been losing it, and this could very well happen to America. We could go way of Australia. Australia used to be able to own firearms. They pushed gun confiscation. Used to have free speech. They pushed hate speech codes. This could very well happen to the United States. They're building the theoretical framework for this. So with the whole Russian conspiracy theory, they claim that our elections are under attack, and of course the answer is to control free speech, to censor certain things. And this way, under the guise of a national emergency, they can implement aggressive restrictions on the First Amendment.
And honestly, Daniel, the thing that needs to be explained, if it needs to be explained, you actually can control a people when you control the information that it receives. I think of my time in the Soviet Union right before it broke up. I was there when Boris Yeltsin was running for president. I did interviews in Moscow for about 2 weeks. Bottom line is, almost everyone I interviewed, from a neurologist named Clara Labadinskaya to the head of English language programming at the KGB, Yuri Minaev, were stunned as they began to get news from the West for the first time in 40-something years. They were stunned. It was like the people were in shock because they had lived under sort of a delusion of reality. And that's exactly what's happening in North Korea, too. It's a delusion. It's not reality. And you can control a population if you control their information. What is the antidote to this, Daniel? What can we do about this?
Well, the left's strength is centralization. It's total control, whether it's over information, whether it's over political systems. They build institutions, then they control institutions, and they centralize institutions, and they collectivize people using those institutions. Our approach has always been the individual, to disrupt large institutions, to disrupt large control. If you think about the American Revolution, what we did was disrupt a very, very large institution and make it possible for individuals to actually decide their own fate, their own fortune. And that's what we really have to be doing. The Republican reforms are out now, actually, give people more of their money. The more money we take out of the government, the more money we put back into people's pockets, the more power and freedom people actually have, and this goes not just for money, but for everything. The more freedom we give back to people, the more freedom to speak, the more freedom to make their own choices, to make their own decisions, to live their lives the way they want to, the harder it will be for the left to dominate them, because the left depends on institutions. We depend on people.
You know, I really think that the reason, one of my theories, the reason that the left hates Donald Trump so much, Daniel, is that he will not be controlled and confined by political correctness. And I think that's probably why so many of the rest of us like him. It's refreshing to hear people actually saying what they think and not caring. We do not have enough of that. We have sort of been browbeaten into feeling like we either cannot say that we feel a certain way, or we just don't fit in, or there will be social punishment, which kind of brings us to the psychological approach of the left, and maybe we should talk about that. My guest is Daniel Greenberg, and by the way, Sultan Kish is his blog. If you want to read some of his stuff, we'll post it on our Facebook page so that you can have access to that. He's with the David Horowitz Freedom Center in California. And when we return, we'll talk about, there are other things that the left is doing. Daniel mentioned the institutional dominance. We have not talked about, at least at any length, what they're doing about the Second Amendment. So we'll do that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Just after 7 a.m., batting practice was wrapping up when the first shots rang out. A bystander's video captured the sound of bullets piercing the air. Tennessee Congressman Chuck Fleischman and others sprinted to the dugout, where he says they felt like sitting ducks.
Today I experienced the carnage of actual gunshots being fired firsthand. It was horrific.
Witnesses say it soon became a gun battle between the shooter and police. Congressman Joe Barton, who manages the team, was there with his 10-year-old son, Jack, who took cover under a nearby SUV.
Dozens, if not hundreds, of shots fired. It was scary.
Witnesses say the gunman approached a fence along the third baseline, but never got on the field. Republican Whip Steve Scalise, standing on second base, was shot first. Other lawmakers took cover in the first base dugout.
In all, four people were shot by the assailant. Congressman Scalise is in critical condition after surgery. Lobbyist Matt Micah is also in critical condition. He was shot twice in the chest. Officer Greiner was shot in the ankle. She is in good condition. And finally, staffer Zach Barth was shot in the leg. He is in good condition.
All right, that was Chip Reed of CBS News. And, of course, that happened, I think, was it a year ago? It's unbelievable how things unfold. That was the shooting of targeted Republican congressmen who were practicing for the congressional baseball game on the field. We all know that Steve Scalise nearly lost his life, and thank God for the guards there who stopped the shooter, or there would have been more dead. You know, these kinds of uprisings or stirring ups or controlling of thought or provocation of people lead to violence. They just do. It's happened in every totalitarian society you can list. It's not just words. People get angry and tensions rise, and then pretty soon the only way to control people is through violence itself. And so I think the American people are sensing that. My guest is Daniel Greenfield, not Daniel Greenberg. Sorry about that, Daniel. But Daniel writes under the title Sultan Kish. He writes for David Horowitz Freedom Center. Daniel, we just saw the White House Correspondents' Dinner, not just recently. I played a lot of the monologue of Michelle, whatever her name was. What is the danger of that? I mean, that's just words. That's just words, right? So why should we be so upset about it?
Well, they do have a common denominator. The shooting at the charity baseball game and the White House Correspondents' Dinner nastiness both reflect an idea. The idea is that Trump is basically Hitler, that Republicans are completely unacceptable, that we can't just let the normal democratic processes go by, but that they have to be destroyed. And once you accept that idea, well, then everything possible should be done to remove it, whether it's the Mueller investigation or going out there, cutting out the middleman, and actually trying to murder congressional Republicans. Because the whole premise of a democracy is that you can accept if the other side wins and your side loses because you're going to try again. The left's whole idea is that it's a zero-sum game. The idea of Republicans winning is completely unacceptable because Trump is Hitler. Republicans are completely evil, and any victory by them is utterly unacceptable and that has to be destroyed. The media has been putting this out repeatedly in various ways, and the so-called entertainment complex of the media has also been putting it out. And at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, we actually saw a blend of that. We actually saw these reporters sitting there, and Michelle Wolf, who is alumni of The Daily Show, which the media actually treated as a model, was there saying the nastiest possible things. This is an orgy of hatred, the kind of orgy of hatred that led the Bernie Sanders supporter, who actually went out there and tried to murder Republicans. The same orgy of hatred is there in a somewhat more dressed-up way at the Hilton in Washington, D.C., where everybody was getting very nicely entertained by actually, again, imbibing hatred. And hatred has become the fundamental currency of the left. And as you mentioned quite correctly, hatred of that kind does eventually lead to violence. At the Washington, D.C. level, it's been a kind of legal violence. When the FBI raids President Trump's lawyer and then Hillary's nominee for attorney general decides that he doesn't actually have attorney-client privilege, confidentiality, that's a kind of illegal violence. It's violence under the color of the law. What happened at the charity baseball game was violence without the color of the law. But the reality is they both have the same origin point. We see that in the text from Trzok. We see that in the actual attacks. Once you actually get people to think that they have to do everything possible to stop the other political party, then they can do that using legal means. They can do that using illegal means. But it has the same ugly, nasty, totalitarian origin point.
You know, also we should probably point out, Daniel, that part of the progression here is always to dehumanize the object of your hate, to begin to call them names, to make them less than human, subhumans. You know, what was in Nazi Germany, it was the useless eaters, the people that they ended up, that was one tiny pejorative, horrible thing that they called people. But it's like, what? Give me another example. The Jews are pigs from the Muslim perspective. It's the same. It happens always. Before the slaughter comes the dehumanizing and the ridicule and the mocking, as though people don't have any right, like Sarah Huckabee Sanders didn't have the dignity. I didn't have the right as a human being not to be publicly, I don't know what the word is. I can't think of a strong enough word. Publicly embarrassed and humiliated, as though she would allow that, by Michelle Wolf. That was okay. And I think, you know, probably there was people in the audience who thought that was okay too, don't you?
Yeah, there was plenty of laughter there. And I think a good word is degradation, because when you dehumanize somebody, you have to actually establish that by degrading them, by showing that they're less than human, that they're not equal. And, you know, the left actually keeps saying, no, it's just comedy, it's just jokes. But we see a double standard there. When Obama came out, it was basically illegitimate to make jokes about him. Saturday Night Live could make jokes around Obama, but they could never turn Obama into a cartoon the way that they had Bush, the way that they now have Trump. So there's a double standard there, and the double standard reveals a kind of a master race divide. Some people can be degraded and dehumanized using humor. Other people can't be. Other people are above that. There's a master race, and there are these subhuman people, and conservatives have become these subhumans of the left entertainment media complex.
Yes, and the next step, really, at least one of the steps, eventual steps, I don't know if maybe there's an in-between, I pray there is an in-between, is now, you know, they deserve to be arrested. They deserve to have their rights, whatever rights they were guaranteed under the Constitution, ignored, and have their places searched, and their private stuff is not private. Their private conversations are, because they don't deserve those kinds of protections. Now, we, the controlling elites, we deserve special treatment, but they deserve whatever they get, they deserve it. And then that leads, of course, to then actually acting out violently and not feeling guilty about it, because after all, they are fill in the blank, useless eaters. They are what is deplorables. They are, you fill in the blank. And we're just as the pattern that we are seeing. It really is appalling. Daniel, I know that you have a good grasp on the psychology of all of this, because a lot of the totalitarian efforts are psychological. That's why they're effective. I think of George Orwell's 1984. It's controlling people's minds. And a mutual friend of ours, Stella Morabito, has written a great deal about the fragility of self-esteem. And I remember Saul Alinsky, one of his rules was to isolate, target, and destroy individuals. That is the way we take power. Could you just say a word about that?
The left tends to zero in on individuals, on destroying individuals. It likes to pretend that it talks about ideas, but in reality, it views people as the enemy of ideas, the individual, and it goes after the individual. It sets out to destroy them. We've been seeing that from day one with the Trump administration, obviously with Trump himself, with anybody around them, with, for example, now Admiral Jackson. Anybody who is in any way associated with the right has to be personally destroyed. Their lynch mobs on social media, on Twitter, will actually zero in on somebody who supposedly did something wrong, some politically correct offense, and they will go after them personally because it's about power. It's about degrading individuals. Because really, what is the purpose of power? The purpose of power is to dominate, degrade, and destroy individuals. It's something that Orwell very aptly summed up in O'Brien's monologues in 1984. The purpose of power is power. The purpose is to be able to actually take another human being, degrade, and destroy them, because that is how you know you have power. And we see the end result in every single communist, totalitarian, Marxist dictatorship that ultimately is reduced to an upper class that lives really well and that is able to destroy and dominate the ordinary person on a regular, constant basis. Again, 1984's famous quote is, picture a boot stamping on the human face forever. That is what the left is. That is what we saw at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's what we see in the media narrative day after day after day.
Daniel, when I was a kid, I used to love to go to horror movies. Now, I know that's a horrible thought, but they were much more innocent when I was growing up. I loved Dracula was one of them. And, of course, there was always the famous scene where someone, some brave person, would grab and struggle to hold up a cross. And when they held up the cross in front of Dracula, Dracula would melt, and all of the fierce evil wickedness that he, and the murder and the blood-sucking that he did, just stopped because the cross just melted him. And I sort of feel that the thing that melts this, from my perspective, is truth. Truth. Exposing this and telling the truth. I'm wondering how you feel about that, and if you think there's another antidote, I'm all ears.
I think that is the ultimate antidote, because the media is based on lies, and what's the best way to confront lies? It's confronting it with the truth. Media, of course, has built an entire infrastructure based on making it impossible to know what truth is, based on tangible truth, based on the hijacking and co-opting truth, and that's put through their fact checks. Originally, fact checks used to mean that the media actually fact-checked itself and to see if it's telling the truth. Now, facts have been, a very Orwellian way, we twist it to mean that the media will now lie about the truth that other people say. So the truth is certainly the best way to confront the media, but it's also a matter of the tactical way to present that truth, because the media is very good at sabotaging, undermining, and confusing the truth. So truth in its purest form is definitely kryptonite, but it's also the ability to confront, to shock the media, by confronting it with it directly, rather than going through the motions, rather than going through assorted processes and procedures and soft-pedaling. And this is something that Trump has done very well.
Absolutely. You know, Kellyanne Conway is really good at that, too. We've got a lot of people that are out there, and a lot of people on radio, who are doing everything they can. American Family Radio is one of those, to just continuously speak the truth and hope that we can get beyond the noise, and certainly that parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents will teach their kids the truth. You know, when I back to the Soviet Union, honestly, Daniel, every person I interviewed, from the highest rank to the lowest, every single one, without fail, without me asking them, told me that they had a grandmother, a babushka, who told them about God. They all volunteered that to me. And they remembered that their grandparent had told them about God, and they had been told for 50 years there was no God. And they were stunned to think there might be. My point is that we can plant seeds in our kids. And if we lose our freedoms, we can plant seeds that will bear fruit at some future date. Daniel, you said earlier, and we only have about a minute or two left here, that you were encouraged. Encourage us. Why are you encouraged?
I'm encouraged because it's a very important point that you just now made of God. What is the left based on? What is it selling point. It claims to provide purpose and meaning to people, but doesn't do that with anything positive. Instead, it manufactures crises. It tells people that they're enlightened for adopting Musk's idea of the problem and the solution, which inevitably involves government power. It's a secular religion. It worships the power of the left. And there's always God there. There's true purpose and meaning that is far, vastly beyond the left's construction. The left is ultimately based on cynicism, on the negative, on resentment, on jealousy, on anger, on fear. And we have the power of positive emotions, of building, of faith, of religion. And these things cannot ultimately be squashed. We saw that in the Soviet Union, as you just described. These things can be suppressed. They can be forced underground. People can be twisted. They can be perverted. And we are seeing that all around us. But ultimately, there is a power of redemption, a power of faith, and a power of hope. And again, we are seeing that now with the latest poll in which people are waking up. They're seeing that there's more money in their paychecks. They have more power. They have more freedom to run their own lives, and they're recognizing that.
You just gave me goosebumps, Daniel. That's encouraging, and we certainly both of us believe in a transcendent God who will have the last say, a just God. Regardless of what happens on this earth, which we're going to fight to stop, he will have the last say. Daniel Greenfield, again, with the David Horowitz Freedom Center. It's Sultan Kish, and we'll put his articles on our Facebook page. Daniel, thank you so much for your expertise and your time. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.